And we're joined by Rear Admiral Chris Sadler. I guess I can call you Chris?
Absolutely.
I can't call Captain. That would be below him.
Admiral.
Literally.
Wow. I've never met an admiral before. I'm in awe here.
I am. I mean, look at that uniform. This guy's perfect. He's not camping here, I guarantee that. Not out in Mudland. So, sir, good morning. How are you today?
Oh, good morning. Great. Glad to be here. We flew up on the Southwest 737 for a couple of reasons. You know, this is a centennial of naval aviation where we honor the innovation and the courage of the last 100 years of naval aviators and not only the pilots but the mechanics and the support personnel who allow us to accomplish our mission. And part of that, I'm a reserve officer, Navy reserve officer, and we flew up here on a Southwest 737 because I'm going to give Southwest Airlines an employer support of the Guard and Reserve Award. And basically, we're honoring Southwest for supporting all the guardsmen and reservists that work for them, because we're very busy. You know, the days of the old 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year, those are long gone. For our Navy reservists that fly, we put in a minimum of 60 days a year, and the average is probably closer to about 80 days a year working for the Navy in various capacities.
And that would include pilots as well?
Absolutely. That's mainly what I'm talking about with that amount of days or the pilots. You know, anything from being flight instructors where you'll come in a couple days a week and you'll do that, you know, a couple weeks out of the month, to our logistics pilots who they'll deploy overseas for anywhere from 17 to 30 days at a time. We have various detachment sites overseas that we use to support the Navy when they're deployed. We have folks that do counter-illicit trafficking, what used to be called counter-narcotics missions. They could be deployed for, you know, up to 45 days. And then, obviously, we have folks that fly. We have helicopters that fly our special operations forces over in Iraq. They're usually deployed for a couple months, as well as our Prowler squadron. They support Operation Enduring Freedom. They're usually deployed for about 70 days in country over there. So the bottom line, it's a big time commitment. It's a long time for folks to be away from their civilian employers. And when our pilots are gone, and all our Navy reservists, the folks left in the office or in the cockpit or with the company, they got to pick up the slack. Yeah. And so that's what we're here to do, to honor Southwest for being very supportive, because without the support of our employers, we in the reserve component, we can't do our job.
Well, that's an important part because, you know, the family that stays behind, they make sacrifices too. And so those are very important sacrifices. It's got to be tough to keep a pilot, a reserve pilot, carrier qualified. How do you go about doing that?
Well, you know, we don't do as much as we used to, but typically, believe it or not, to maintain your currency, you only have to get two touch and goes and two arrested landings, two traps. If you've landed on the ship within 12 months. So typically what you do is you'd work up through a period of what we call field carrier landing practices, FCLPs. So you practice your landings at the field. And, of course, we have a meatball, you know, which is the lens we use to judge our glide path. And you practice those at the field, and then you go out to the ship. And that's how you do it. So just by the fact that we're Navy veterans you know, we've made cruises on active duty, and then when we transition to the reserve component, you know, we have that experience base. So it's not like we're learning to do it for the first time.
Right, it all comes back.
It comes back pretty quick. And of course, if you just get two touch and goes and two traps, you know, about the time you're done, you're feeling pretty comfortable with it, and then you're done and you got to go. So yeah. If it's outside of a year, you have to get more. Usually it's like two touch and goes and 10 traps or something like that. And then you could actually you get a little more comfortable and you can have it's always fun in the daytime, but then you can have more fun. I love landing aboard a carrier in the daytime. It's great. Nighttime, I don't necessarily look forward to.
A little more stressful, huh?
A little more stressful. In fact, you know, they did a study of Navy carrier pilots in Vietnam, and they put heart monitors on them, and they looked at them, and believe it or not, the most stressful part of the mission was not when they were over the beach, you know, getting shot at, but it was landing aboard the aircraft carrier at night. And certainly I've done it about 102 times. And
Who's counting?
But who's counting? But who's counting? And it's one of those things where you're very wired afterwards. And you, in other words, you're not gonna land at night and then just go to bed. You know, you're up for a good 2 or 3 hours afterwards just to sort of calm down afterwards.
Get the jitters out and go clean.
That's an adrenaline rush. Yeah.
So yeah,
that sounds like something that would be fun to do as a civilian. Take an airfield and mark it up like a carrier deck with a little meatball, and then try carrier landings in your 150.
It's definitely got to sharpen your pilot skills.
It could be done, although you know the difference between the carrier-based planes and most of the civilian planes is we don't flare when we land.
Yeah,
and so if you're on glide path, it's about a 750 foot per minute rate of descent. And you just slam on down.
Yeah. Literally a controlled crash.
Yeah, you couldn't do that in a 150.
Yeah, wouldn't it be good in a 150? Yeah.
Well, you could do it once.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Then there'd be a lot of interesting people you get to talk to.
Next.
And similarly, we don't flare when we land because if you pick the nose up, first of all, you get slow, and it'll cause you to, you know, your rate of ascent to increase, and then it lowers your hook. So if you get low and slow, you know, you could risk hitting the back of the ship with your hook or something. You know, ooh, bad things happen. So we try. What we teach the pilots as they're landing aboard the carrier, it's called meatball lineup angle of attack. So you look outside for the meatball. That's your visual glide slope indicator. And then your lineup, you actually, just like any runway, you look at the end of the angle deck, and that's what keeps you on center line. Of course, the ship is moving, you know, so you're
just
always
to mess with you.
So you're always making slight corrections to the right, although you don't really know you're doing it, but you are. And then angle attack is your airspeed. And we have, of course, now the modern planes, it's all in your HUD. They have what's called an E bracket, and basically you keep the velocity vector inside the E bracket, and that keeps you on speed. And your scan is always, it's always going. And then as you get closer to the ship, by that time, you got your airspeed under control, so it's meatball lineup, and then when you're crossing the ramp, and you got your lineup pretty squared away, you know, then it's a little bit of meatball, and then you touch down, and hopefully you grab a three wire, and the landing signal officers, the LSO, say, "So you did a great job. We'll give you an okay for a grade, which is like an A."
And, an okay.
Yeah.
Nobody gets an A.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you go have a if it's nighttime, you go have a slider, you go have a hamburger or a cheeseburger while you're
boy, talk about the $100 million hamburger.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then you get to do it all again the next day.
Now I understand too. As soon as those wheels hit the deck, you go to full power, right? In case you miss the wire.
Absolutely, full afterburning power, because you want to have enough thrust on the engines so that if you do have what we call a hook skip or you just fly over the wires, you get too high, that you have enough power on the plane to take off. Because, you know, the planes, they're turbofans, so if you were to, say, land at idle, it would take some time for the engines to spool up. Yeah. And especially in the F-14 that I flew, if you were to land at idle and miss the wires, you'd be in the water before the engine spooled up. So that's a big no-no, is coming back to idle when you land. You go to full non-afterburning power, and then you wait for the tug on the wire, and sort of when you're stopped, and then you pull it back to idle.
I actually did, little quick story time. I did see a video of an A6 that missed the hook, went off the deck, not at full power, was dropping into the water, both guys punched out.
Right.
And then the airplane
and the
flew,
plane flew away.
It started climbing out.
I think I've seen the same thing. You know, the plane obviously got into ground effect or something or other.
Well, it also lost a lot of weight when they punched out.
Yeah, lost a little bit. And then what happened was the engines are probably caught up with it. You know, he had the power up and was waiting for something to happen.
And it did after he left the aircraft.
But, yeah, that's
a tough one to explain to the
CEO. That's happened a few times, yeah.
So you guys, the reserves are like you were saying, they're way busier than they've ever been.
Well, we're busy because I'll speak to what I know, which is the Navy Reserve and the Naval Air Force Reserve, which is what I'm in charge of. We fly, you know, worldwide operations. Our logistics fly around the world. We have permanent death sites in Bahrain, Sigonella, and Atsugi, Japan. In fact, for Operation Tomodachi, which was the Japanese relief effort after the tsunami hit, we surged from two logistics airplanes to six. I'm talking C-130s, C-9s, and the C-40A, which is basically a 737. So flying around cargo, people, parts, relief supplies, doing all that stuff. In fact, I don't know if you remember when the riots first happened in Cairo, but we flew in a security team to the embassy, and that was Navy reservists doing that. And I mentioned over in Iraq, there's Navy Reserve officers that are flying around special operations forces doing real-world stuff. So it's
an exciting branch of the Navy.
It's very exciting. Take adversaries. You know, we provide about 75% of the Navy's adversary support. And what the adversary pilots do is we pretend we're the bad guys. So we'll fly bad guy formations and we'll simulate shooting bad guy air-to-air weapons. And we let our fighters practice their blue air tactics so they can practice shooting us down.
You say Top Gun?
And so, well, that's exactly it. If you think of, I forget the bad guy's name, but that's what we did, or that's what we do.
It was Michael Ironsides was the actor.
It was Viper and Jester.
Yes, exactly. And I actually used to do that when I was on active duty. I was an adversary pilot back with VF-43 at Oceania. And those have all been decommissioned, but the reserve component has picked up that role.
So you still have the airplanes?
We fly Hornets and F-5s.
Nice.
And so, the F-5 is, very, very hard to see.
Yeah, small.
So hopefully they take you out, with a radar missile pre-merge. But if you get into visual arena, it's tough to see.
It's a whole new ball game when you're close up, that's for sure.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. We've got to get going, unfortunately. I know you got another question.
Another dozen questions, but we're out of time.
All right. Thank you, Admiral Chris Sadler.
Well, thank you very much for having us.